And ladies and gentlemen, as you probably figured out, this is the KSFR Spring Fun Drive. It's not actually quite exactly spring yet, but it's getting pretty close to spring, and it certainly has felt like spring for several weeks now. And it is the time when we ask you to call in and make a pledge to support your public radio station. We're going to be talking today about bears. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about movies. The next day we're going to be talking about science. The next day, books. And the next day, public media. And I thought we'd have a week here on the KSFR Fun Drive on the Radio Cafe that kind of reflected not only this show, but our community. So today, animals and bears. And Ben Swan is here. He's with the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society. Welcome, Ben.
Hi, Mary Charlotte. Glad to be here. Thank you so much.
And so what we're doing right now is, before a couple days ago, I interviewed a wonderful man named Ben Killam, who basically grew up, he did grow up raising and rescuing wildlife, and as an adult started rescuing bear cubs in New Hampshire. And we're going to hear him, and people will be able to get copies of his book, which I swear I just devoured. It's such a great book. But in order to get that book and in order to keep this show and this station on the air, we're asking you to call 428-1393, 428-1393, and make a pledge to KSFR in the name of animals.
Any bear that you like, I guess, right?
Any bear, any dog, any kitty, any bunny, any hamster, any animal that has basically meant something to you in your life. 428-1393. And we're basically coming to you, Ben and I, this morning to tell you what public media means to us and hope that that resonates with you. Ben Swan, what is public media? What is KSFR all about for you?
Well, for us and for the people at the animal shelter, it's really how we connect with the community. And I think that's KSFR is the best way for people to understand what's going on in the community, not, you know, really from that grassroots level. Thanks to KSFR, we've really been able to let people know about our programs, let people know about our animals that are available for adoption, and just how important it is to create that bond between animal and humans. It's just the best way to really connect with your community.
428-1393 is the number, and we have a $1,000 goal for this hour. So what we're hoping is 100 people call in with $10 contributions, or 50 people call in with $20 contributions, or whatever it takes to reach our $1,000 goal for this hour. So please give us a call. I was going to ask you, Ben, when we talk about a particular animal on the air that's up for adoption, do people then tend to come in for that animal?
It does. It really does work. It really brings the message across what animals are available. And it might not be that particular animal, but it might be another one that they because through that process of going to our website, they might see a different animal that might suit them or match with them better. So, yeah, it really does help. And like I said, it's really important for us to let people know what we're doing in the community. Just like you guys reflect everything that's going on in the community, KSFR, through your news media, through everybody who really works so hard to keep people informed about what's going on in Santa Fe.
428-1393 is the number. And I know there's a lot of people who listen to this show and a lot of people who wake up with this show and feel like this show is really part of their lives. If that is you, please call in now. I know that a lot of people have never contributed to public radio before, and they say, well, you know, somebody else will do it, or, oh, I'll do it another day. If you would call now, it would be so awesome for me and for this station and for Ben Swan and the animal shelter, because it basically shows that the support that you talk about and the love for this station that you talk about is backed up. We're not asking anybody to give a large amount of money. What we're asking them to give is just what they think this is worth to them. So maybe $10 a month, something like that. That's sort of pennies a day.
But you know, Mary Charlotte, I don't think anybody would turn away a large amount, right?
No, we will. No gift is too large.
Exactly. In fact, I know there's a few supporters out there who could probably easily handle $1,000 just to support you and just tell you how much your show is important, how important it is to the community.
You know, let's get that call.
Yeah, that would be wonderful.
428-1393 is the number. And let's go now to hear Ben Killam. I'm very happy to welcome Ben Killam. He is author of the book Out on a Limb, What Black Bears Have Taught Me About Intelligence and Intuition. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hi, Mary Charlotte. Thanks for having me.
So tell us how you started rescuing orphaned black bear cubs.
Well, like everything in life, it almost came by accident. I grew up with my father, Lawrence Killam, who was a virologist at the Dartmouth Medical School, who studied birds as an avocation. So I grew up with lots of wild animals around the house. My dad wrote a book on woodpeckers of the eastern United States, as well as a book on crows and ravens. And when I was 2 years old, he went on sabbatical to Africa and brought a half-grown leopard into the house, much to my mother's chagrin. My younger sister, Phoebe, was one at the time, and she currently helps me with the black bears. And my next oldest brother, Josh, was four, and he woke up one morning with a leopard at the end of his bed screaming. But needless to say, we all survived and returned from Africa with two African hornbills and a Nile crocodile that my dad raised in a basement shower until it was about 6 feet long. So I grew up with a exposure to lots of wild animals. In 1961, we came up to New Hampshire, and he had a license to keep any wild animal that was brought to him. So we had porcupines and fox and woodpeckers and aviaries and crows and ravens and hawks and owls. And when my time came along, I was interested in carnivores. And carnivores present a bit of a problem to study because for anybody who's had any experience with them, they know that they disappear rapidly into the forest and you don't get much of a chance to observe them. My dad prided himself with simple apparatus, and he and my mother would sit in front of a woodpecker nest and document courtship and behavior. But for carnivores, I had to have a different plan. And based on my childhood experience, I decided I could take an orphan animal and raise it loose in the forest, acting as a surrogate mother to it, and use that, document its juvenile behavior, and use that information to learn about its adult behavior. I wasn't thinking about black bears because at the time there was no rehabilitation of black bears in Vermont or New Hampshire or most of New England. I was thinking more on the lines of a coyote or a bobcat or a fisher, the large woodland weasel we have around here. But it happened to be black bears that came my way, and they turned out to be the ideal animal to study in this fashion because they have a long juvenile period, and they're very methodical. You can see what they're doing. They're not running and darting around. And so it's worked out very well.
Now, how did the bear cubs that you adopted become orphans in the first place?
Well, they become orphans in lots of different ways. We've raised and rehabilitated and returned to the wild over 100 black bear cubs at this point. And some of them, their mothers are shot at chicken coops that don't have adequate protection, which could be as simple as an electric fence with bait on it, peanut butter or bacon grease rubbed on the wire, because bears check out all new smells with their tongue. They're easy to manage, but people tend to overreact and just shoot, and then next thing you know, there's a bunch of cubs up a tree, and that's a problem. But mothers get hit by automobiles, and sometimes it's a logging operation that disturbs the den, and the cubs are sent to us. This year we had two cubs that came from a rabbit hunter that happened to shoot the mother, and his dog got after the cubs, so they were injured when they came in. So there's also natural abandonments. If mother bears don't put on enough fat to nurse their cubs through the spring, they'll often separate from the cubs, and the cubs will show up in people's yards, and we get those as well.
Now, you have a special relationship with a female bear named Squirty. Tell us about her and about the long-term connection that you have formed.
Well, Squirty came to me about 18 years ago, and she was a 3-pound cub, and she had two siblings, and their den was disturbed by in a logging operation, and Squirty has not only successfully established herself in the wild, but she currently shares a greater home range with daughters and granddaughters. As Squirty gained more land, she would place a daughter in that expanded territory, and her daughters would do the same thing. So currently there's a fairly large area that her family group or clan controls. But I see her on a regular basis, and I can still change her radio collar without sedating her. It costs me a few Oreo cookies to do it each time, but she'll let me do it as long as I pay her.
Because basically she thinks that you're on some level her mother.
Well, she may think that I'm her mother, but she's dominant over me.
Right.
I still am, you know, when I go and interact with her in the wild, I'm taking her time. And if I take too much time, she'll ask me to leave by false charging me or otherwise communicating with me. But the interesting thing is, because I raised her, she treats me like a bear. There is no intimidation between us. And she has rules, and I have to obey her rules. And if I don't, she'll punish me or false charge or bite me to make sure that I understand the importance of it. And then if she bites me, she'll reconcile. She'll go into a soft, repetitive moan saying, "I'm terribly sorry, but that was necessary."
Well, that's one of the things that's so amazing about this book is you write about how bears have a kind of moral code and a judicial system to enforce that code. What does that look like?
Well, it's very similar to our own, and bears, I believe, are reciprocal altruists. They share their resources with strangers, and they do it because no bear or group of bears can control all the resources they need at any given time, unlike truly social animals that have territories with family units living within those territories. And because of this, the closest thing they have to a territory is a female. An adult female has to have 3 to 8 square miles of high-quality home range to raise cubs on, because their cubs have short legs. And she's relatively territorial over that area. And these female home ranges are evenly spaced on the landscape. But their food supply, which is the highest quality foods in the forest, the nuts, berries, and ants, bees, and grubs, are generally available in patches and affected by the weather and unevenly dispersed on the landscape. So at any given time, one female bear may have a huge surplus of food in her home range, and her immediate neighbor can have nothing. And this has led to a system of sharing over time. But in any system of sharing, there has to be some way of dealing with cheaters. And that's where a judicial system comes in. And bears, wherever they travel, it's transparent. They're leaving scent on wherever their fur touches an object or a leaf or a branch that other bears can follow. So they can follow each other to find food, which they do on a regular basis, and they can follow each other to punish if one bear breaks another bear's rule. And it's a much better judicial system than we have. You know, we have DNA and fingerprinting, but we think that's hot stuff. But we have to get it off the perpetrator. We got to find it at the crime scene, and we've got to find the perpetrator again. And bears know who took their food, and they can track them down and exact punishment at any given time.
Your work has exposed a lot of popular ideas about bears as being really myths that aren't true. For example, what you've just described, bears aren't solitary creatures. They, in fact, have all kinds of communication and complicated social structures.
Yeah, when I started doing this work, bears were thought to be solitary, and that is that the only interactions they had with their own kind was with their offspring and their mates during the mating season, and they knew they congregated at concentrated food sources like salmon rivers or dumps. But other than that, they knew very little about them. And every animal, you know, as simply as we may lay out their social behavior in words, like saying solitary or social. It has to be much more complex than it is. And it's just been a matter of taking the time to make the observations, to assemble all the observations that I've found and recognize the system that's taking place. And it's a very elaborate social system. And these bears, on a regular basis, communicate and cooperate with strangers. And that's what makes them so much like ourselves.
We're talking to Ben Killam about his book, Out on a Limb, What Black Bears Have Taught Me About Intelligence and Intuition. And we are here in the Santa Fe Baking Company, me and Ben Swan, waiting for your calls. We've gotten a couple of calls. We're just barely on our way to our $1,000 goal for this hour. The number is 428-1393. Have you learned anything from this conversation?
Well, I love listening to it. And, you know, growing up in Alaska, of course, I have a very different kind of view of bears, but it's really enlightening to hear what he has to say about them. You know, bears are just incredible creatures that I always try to stay away from.
Yes, indeed. I know. The cover of this book, which you can get if you call 428-1393, 428-1393, right now. We've got 10 books. The publicist very generously just sent me 10 books. I have them right here. And the cover of the book shows Ben Killam nose to nose with an adult black bear.
Something I would never want to do.
No.
As a kid, we always had to wear bells on our when we go hiking and things like that to keep things away from us.
Right. So. Which makes sense. And you don't really want to go nose to nose with a black bear that you didn't raise since it weighed 1 pound. Nevertheless, 428-1393 is the number to give a call to the KSFR Fun Drive. And one thing that I wanted to say about the KSFR Fun Drive is that many people subscribe to various things. You might subscribe to a magazine, you might subscribe to cable, you certainly probably subscribe to internet. And these various subscriptions that you have, the subscriptions pay for them, often you also get advertising with them. KSFR, you don't pay a subscription, and so the reason we go on the air twice a year is actually to stay on the air and also to provide you with sound that has minimal advertising. We don't even have advertising per se. We have what's called underwriting. We have a very limited amount of it per hour so that we can bring you hour after hour of really good, clean sound that is not tainted by commercials, nor is it tainted by commercial interests. So we are not beholden to Pepsi Cola or to General Motors or whatever. We don't have the big money that comes from them either. This is why we are community-supported radio. We need your support, ladies and gentlemen, every lady and every gentleman listening right now, to stay on the air. 428-1393.
Yeah, and, you know, the pledge drives, I think they're so much fun because it kind of reminds you that, oh, yeah, I'm supporting this. This is something that I believe in. But on the other hand, it's nice if people do a recurring kind of monthly support as well. So you don't have to always, like, oh, when you're riding and driving into work and you're going, like, that's right, I need to give my $20, $30, $50 to KSFR. It's nice to have that monthly kind of that they would take out or for you.
Very much so. We have a what's called sustaining membership option, and so if you want to give, let's say, $10 a month to KSFR, then, or 20 or 30 or 100, whatever works for you, but, I mean, small amounts are fine, and a lot of people find that to be really nice, because then when the fund drive comes around, they can listen, but they're like, I've already given it. If you want to give an extra amount and get another baseball cap, something like that, you can certainly do so, But it's just a great way to give to KSFR.
It's always fun to have your name read aloud after they donate it, after you've donated something to it. It's just a fun thing to do.
Have
or
you
for
done
your
that?
Animal. Oh yeah, I have, especially during your show.
Yeah, I know. So,
yeah, and it would be nice if people actually really did pledge whatever they wanted for in the name of their animal, their best friend. That would be wonderful.
Yeah, and some people have. Sometimes during the... We used to do a segment called Dogs versus Cats,
yes.
Which is better.
Yeah. I was always supporting of the cats, even though I'm kind of a dog person. But I always feel that cats are so underrepresented that we always
are you
need
saying
to them.
That cats are underdogs?
Ooh, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Cats
yeah.
are underdogs.
Yes, and we just finished up a online photo contest about cats, and it was wonderful just to see because you know cats. They don't present as well as dogs do because dogs are always yapping. But a photo, online photo contest really allowed people to really show the strut their feline stuff.
People are calling, and we're very, very happy about this. The number is 428-1393. We've got a $1,000 goal for this hour. There's also a toll-free number, 1-866-907-5737. That's 866-907-KSFR. And we also want to say, if you don't want your name read aloud, that's fine, too. During the next break, we're going to read people's names whose names want to be read. So be sure to call in right now, 428-1393. And we're going to go back now to from Ben Swan to Ben Killam.
That's right.
Now, it turns out that bears have a sophisticated and varied form of communication that involve visuals and sounds and smells. Tell us about some of the characteristics of bear language that you've observed.
Well, the bear vocalizations are a mix of emotion and intention, and that parallels human language. Our language is an emotional utterance with a mechanical manipulation of our lips, teeth, tongue, and larynx. So we can lie, deceive, or bluff with our words, but if you want to figure out what the truth is, you read our facial expressions and our body language, or you put a polygraph on us. And bears, when they communicate with emotion, they have facial expressions that are very similar to our own, but not as complex, because humans, after all, have the most complex facial expressions of any animal on Earth. But the emotional communication is generally honest. It comes from the central nervous system, and it can be the intensity of a vocalization that determines the mood of the bear at the time. But when they want to communicate with intention, they generate sounds and actions mechanically. So now they chomp their teeth, they huff, they swat, they false charge, they make a guttural sound, which is a ho 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 ho. And the meaning of these sounds and actions are based on the context of the situation at the time. So if you met a female bear while you were out hiking on a hiking trail and her cubs were already up a tree, and she false charged you, that means rushing towards you and expelling a big blast of air that may scare the daylights out of you. She's simply trying to delay confrontation, that is, having you attack her, long enough so communication can take place. But if you were working at a restaurant and you were taking a pail of food scraps out to a dumpster and a bear false charges you, he simply wants you to drop the pail of food scraps before you put it in the dumpster. So it really depends on context, and we as humans we tend to take things literally. We think our language is the only way we communicate. Yet 85% of how we communicate every day is through body language, facial expressions, and intonation of our voice and such.
Bears also communicate, as you've discovered yourself, with a kind of pantomime.
Yeah, the pantomime was terribly interesting. A number of times these bears have, when they felt they weren't communicating to me or realized they weren't communicating to me, they would act out what their needs were. I remember one time one of my bears, Yoda, who was a cub that I raised. She only lived until she was 5 and a half. But I visited her at her winter den in March one year, and she came up to me, and I brought a food, little bit of food for her, just thinking she might be hungry. But she went after my gloves and my hat, and I took them back from her because they were valuable to me, and I didn't realize what she was trying to say to me. And then she went over across about 8 feet of snow and raked up 2 beech leaves and symbolically raked them back to her den. And it dawned on me that she needed bedding. And I looked in the den, and the den was all full of snow and ice because the entry was too big and the snow and ice had blown in. And so the next day I came back and brought her half a bale of hay, and she tucked that down in around herself and the two newborn cubs. But the fact that she could read my mind and know I wasn't understanding something is an example of theory of mind and much higher cognitive abilities than we would expect from these animals.
Well, this is another thing that's really amazing. And I have to say, each time that I interview people who are animal researchers, yet another question comes up or another piece of evidence comes up that human beings aren't as unique or special as we've always thought we were. There are some traits that bears have that we might have thought were unique to humans. Tell us more about some of those.
Well, all of these things, and things like theory of mind and the ability to do mental time travel, to remember the past, apply it to the present, and project into the future. I was with Squirty and one of her mates 1 year, and the first day the mate showed up, when I left to go back to my truck, Squirty followed me. And that happened on a couple successive days. And finally, on the fifth day they were together, I went up in the woods and met him in the woods. And Squirty came down to me, and I offered her a food reward, which I always did to pay for her time, a small bag of dog food that it would take her 35 minutes to eat. But it's the same amount of dog food that if I gave it to my Labrador buddy, he would eat in about a minute and a half. And she came down to my feet, and this big male bear that was about 400 pounds came down and sat 10 feet away. And he would chomp his teeth and lay down, stand up. And then finally he approached her, making a gulp vocalization, which was meant, come on, let's go, let's get out of here. And he came within 4 feet of me, and I got very nervous, and I realized it was probably time I should leave. And I had my video camera, and I filmed the entire encounter. And I waited for him to go back to being 10 feet away. And he laid down and got comfortable, and then I started to back out, intuitively thinking that they'd be happy to see me go. And when I did that, he rushed me, and his head was about 3 feet from me and staring right at me. And Squirty turned around and lunged into him and went, oh, which meant go sit down. And he dutifully backed up and sat down. And I realized that I couldn't get out of there, but I couldn't believe that he didn't want me to go. And so I tried it again, going out another direction, waited for him to lie down and get comfortable again. And again, when I tried it, he rushed me, and again his eyes locked right on mine. And again, Squirty turned and went, oh, and told him to go sit down. And then I realized I was there for the duration. And at this point, I realized that here was a male bear not wanting me to go. And the reason was that in the beginning, when I left, Squirty would follow. And he was relating to that time, applying it to the present, thinking that if I left, Squirty would follow me. And he was projecting and reading her mind and anticipating her actions. So, you know, here he was demonstrating mental time travel through the whole thing. And Squirty was also showing a reciprocal relationship with me by protecting me.
It must be amazing to be in that experience of being protected by a bear.
Well, it was, and thankfully, you know, I've stopped going out with Squirty and her male friends during the mating season. But I remember I got home that evening and showed the footage to my wife Debbie, and Debbie said, "Well, maybe we better get a radio collar for you so we know where to find you ever happens in front of me."
How did you figure out that bears can count?
Well, every night I give Squirty 12 Oreos as a treat, because that's my access to her. I can check her for wounds. I can still touch her with my hands. I can change her radio collar without sedating her. And when I get to 12, she just drops off and walks away. And so I decided one night I was going to short her one. And when I shorted her one, she was attempted to come into the truck to find that extra Oreo. And then I produced it for her. And I did this many different ways, and with the smell of Oreos everywhere, so smell wasn't a factor. And I couldn't fool her. She knew exactly whether I had shorted her by one or two, and she knew that it was 12 she was supposed to get. When she got 12, she wouldn't ask for any more. She would just, you know, drop down and walk away from the truck.
We're talking to Ben Killam about his book, Out on a Limb, What Black Bears Have Taught Me About Intelligence and Intuition. And we're sitting here at the Santa Fe Baking Company.
Doing pantomime.
doing bear pantomime.
That's just amazing, isn't it? Those stories are just incredible.
Can you imagine going out on basically what is the equivalent of a bear date during mating season?
Yeah, I think I would bring some big flowers, a big bouquet of flowers, don't you?
You know, like you that. Might feel
maybe
like a third
Oreos.
Wheel.
Exactly. But, you know, it's kind of interesting that his observations and how he figured things out is sometimes what we do is very similar to what we do with animals. We kind of try to figure out what they're telling us. You know, a lot of people think a dog's wagging tail is a good sign. It can't be, but it's very misleading. So there are certain signs that you have to pay very close attention to. Animals always try to tell you what they want.
And sometimes they look at you with this look that says, are you so stupid that you don't understand just basic grammatical dog?
Exactly. Yeah.
428-1393 is the number. 428-1393. And people have been calling. It's a good hour so far. We're trying for our $1,000 goal. And I wonder if we have any thank yous from the control room.
Oh, plenty.
Yay.
Yay. We have Joe.
Thank you.
Michael.
Yay.
Leslie Barkley.
Thank you.
Norma Schmidt.
Thank you, Norma.
Jack Lehman.
Yay, Jack.
And Michael Solomon.
Awesome.
Elisa.
Thank you.
Sue McKelvey from Bounce Back says, hi, Ben.
Hi, Sue.
Oh, thank you so much, Sue. What a wonderful veterinarian.
Yes, and Ellen Miller.
Thank you, Ellen.
And lastly, but not least, Mary McIntyre. And we also have some anonymous.
And anonymous. Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much. We're not at our $1,000 goal yet, so we definitely want to keep going. 428-1393 is the number. And I feel so happy when people support the Radio Cafe.
Yeah,
because we put so much into it. I mean, Ben, you put so much into your work at the Santa Fe Animal Shelter, and you do it for the animals. And the animals don't write you thank you notes, and they don't write you checks.
Well, they do in different ways, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's still, I mean, you do work and you just put it out there, and every once in a while, we as nonprofit organizations have to do fundraisers, and you guys do yours and we do ours, and we all support each other in those efforts. And when people come out and say, yes, I support that organization, it just makes you feel like your work is worthwhile.
It motivates you. It really does get you going and helps you just to, you know, sometimes you just go on and on and on. You forget about all the things that, the impact that you make. And so it's great to have that acknowledgement. And especially here at KSFR, it's really important that people support the public radio station.
428-1393 is the number. This bear thing, I mean, I hope that people have gotten copies of the book, because the book is really good. And if we run out of the 10 copies that we have, you know, you can go to your local bookstore and order it. It's called Out on a Limb, What Bears Have Taught Me. It's sort of a long subtitle. You can Google it as well. But having access, I mean, it's like, I'm never going to rescue wildlife. It's not going to happen. And so the only thing that you can do if you want to know what that's like, is vicariously hear or read somebody who has done it. And there's so much more detail in the book and so much more humor in the book than we were able to really bring out in this interview, because there's just so much.
He seems like a really fun guy, you know. Bears and just the idea of just jumping in there and doing things like that. It's not for me, but, you know, I think it's important for people to really understand wildlife and how much every little bit of our society, our community, our world is interconnected.
And how these, I want to say people, these bear people, it's their home.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was flying home once to see my mom in Fairbanks, and I sat next to a wildlife biologist and he who focused on bears and how important bears are in our community. He told me that there's a, I don't know if it's true, I'm sure it is, but he said that there's a Spanish saying that says, oso es vida, mm-hmm. bears are life, because whenever you have bears, you have life. It's really how critical is important to have, every species is important on our planet.
428-1393. We're going to go back to Ben Killam, and we hope to reach our $1,000 goal by the end of this hour, so please give a call and give whatever you can to this lovely station and keep more animal stories on this show. Now, you early on were studying wildlife biology, and you decided not to become a research scientist because you have dyslexia, and then you engaged in this decades-long research project outside of academia. What are some of the advantages and disadvantages of not being in that world of credentialed research scientists?
Well, the advantage was I didn't have anybody looking over my shoulders or telling me how I should do things. One of the difficulties of being dyslexic is that it's not just doing the course material in school, it's having to do it somebody else's way. And so school becomes doubly hard for us. And I was never very good at math or statistics, and just generally modern science, I didn't really understand why they were doing things the way they were doing them. I like to observe things. My skill was seeing things in detail. I think in pictures, so I can remember what I see really well and in vivid details. And so I didn't understand why you just couldn't go out and observe and make sense of the world around you, why you had to do these elaborate experiments to answer questions or hypotheses and do things quantitatively. And so when I was unsuccessful at going to graduate school, and when I had the opportunity, I decided to, about 20 years ago, I was accepted as an adult student at the Thayer School of Engineering at Dartmouth College. And they had told me that they were much better at dealing with dyslexia, and if I were tested, I would have accommodations that would make it possible for me to go to the engineering school. Well, I got tested, and I found out that I had a IQ in the top 1%, but I read at a third grade level. And the lady who tested me, her eyes just got big and said, "Boy, it'll be interesting what happens to you." And I was 40 at the time. And I said, "Well, aren't all Dartmouth students, don't they all have IQs like that?" And she says, "No, none of them." And then they put me in remedial calculus and physics and computer programming, and I proceeded to flunk all the classes. And I understood theory, but I couldn't do equations. And with that experience, I realized and just made my mind up. I just said, if I'm that intelligent, why don't I just do things my own way and just forget about trying to form to society? And I've been successful ever since. So it's worked out very well. The drawbacks of not being credentialed are that when I go to conferences and things like that, people just don't want to listen to you because you haven't done it the right way. And you get a lot of dismissal of your work, even though you know an awful lot more and have seen an awful lot more than the people who are dismissing you.
Well, it's interesting because the way you work seems to be similar to the way Jane Goodall has been working her whole career, and as you discovered, also similar to the way bear researchers in Russia are working. Do these methods of serious outdoor patient, long-term, quiet observation, do those no longer exist in the American Academy?
Well, they're certainly disappearing. Jane Goodall had an awful time getting started, and, you know, she was lucky she had Louis Leakey who had promoted her in the beginning, he decided that she needed a PhD to fight off the criticism. And she was afforded a PhD based on her observations. It took about, she just had to write a thesis at Oxford. And that's currently what I'm doing at Drexel University. I'm a PhD candidate now. But they've also been very accommodating. It's the whole PhD program is about teaching me to write a scientific paper, and so I can publish in scientific journals what I've already discovered. But no, the true naturalist is pretty much gone, and it's really unfortunate, because you can find and learn an awful lot by spending years on studying a single subject, much more than you can by simply spending 1 or 2 years doing a quantitative study. You get a much better understanding, and you find out there's lots of questions to pursue. I mean, I have a life, a long list of things I want to pursue and just may never have the time to pursue.
Well, one thing that you have done is you've gotten together with Chinese panda scientists who are trying to reintroduce pandas into the wild. What has that relationship been like? You've gone there, and they've also come to you.
Yes, it's slow putting together a project in China, and I work with a lot of different people, but we're progressing. I'm going to be returning to China on March 22nd for 2 weeks and probably throughout the summer. But it's going to be a very interesting to do the comparative study between the black bear and the panda. Panda lacks the organ that I discovered, and it's a much more primitive bear. But working in a foreign land and with a lot more people involved, nobody paid much attention to the work I did with black bears. Nobody worried about them because there were so many of them. But the pandas, there's only 1,600 left in the world, and they're an icon in China and of national importance. And so everything's much more controlled and regulated, and you've got to move at a much slower pace. But the first part of our study will be teaching the Chinese scientists how to do the kind of work that I've been doing.
Namely, raise bear cubs and then slowly, over the course of many months, reintroduce them into the wild.
Right, that's the goal.
How is having relationships with wild animals like bears different from having relationships with, for example, intelligent dogs?
Well, the nice thing about intelligent dogs is that they, regardless of how we abuse them, they still love us. They don't come back and bite us or punish us or do anything towards us. But a black bear, if you break its rules, it bites you. And they have minds of their own. They're a very different animal than the dog. Dogs are very intelligent, and I suspect black bears are even more intelligent.
I have to ask you this, because we live here in bear country, and sometimes, I mean, in New Mexico, when we have a drought, bears are more likely to come down into the city. How can we stay safe, have good relationship with bears, both bears that might come down into the city, and also when we're out walking in bear country?
My advice is to learn more about the behavior of a bear, and that's obviously what I've written about in Out on a Limb. And I give advice: if you meet a bear, a female bear on a trail, and their cubs are already up a tree, and she false charges you, I've already said that she's trying to delay aggression or contact for communication to take place. You want to be able to control your own behavior. You want to stand erect and keep your eyes on the bear and talk softly to her. Let her know that you're dominant but not a threat. You never want to show weakness in these situations, because an animal that's fearful of you wants to dominate its fear. And that's true with dogs or people or bears. It's a very similar type of behavior that transcends species. And the bears that come into communities and get food from us get tamed very quickly. That's what a definition of a nuisance bear is, and they get tamed quickly because of their social behavior. They share food naturally, and if you share food with a bear, they think highly of you, and they become friendly much quicker. They read much more into the act of sharing with them than you intend to convey. You're actually entering into a social contract with them. And I've often said it, giving food to a bear is like inviting your brother-in-law over for dinner and he stays for a month. They take a lot more advantage of it.
So once you start feeding a bear, then that bear wants you to keep feeding it, and then you've entered into a relationship that you didn't intend to get into.
Right. And if you keep feeding it, ultimately you're going to have the authorities help you get out of the situation because the bears will get either more aggressive or damage property, or they will expect that feeding to continue. But at the same time, the bears that come into communities and get food from people are less aggressive towards people because they think they get, as I say, they get friendly towards them. So you're less likely to get into that situation of a bear false charging you, or where you have to hold your ground and keep your eyes on them and talk softly to them.
Ben Killam is author of the book Out on a Limb, What Black Bears Have Taught Me About Intelligence and Intuition. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte. Thanks for having me.
And, ladies and gentlemen, that was actually an abridged version of the interview. I'll play the whole thing another time in the future, but we wanted to have time to talk to you about the chaos of our fund drive, so I cut a little bit of it out. 428-1393, and we're quite close to our $1,000 goal, but we haven't hit it yet.
Wow, that's amazing. Thank you, everyone, for your support. But you just need a little bit more to get over that $1,000 threshold, which is a great way to start on Monday morning, especially when we have this new time change thing going on.
I know. It was dark when I got out of bed today.
I kind of like that. The dogs didn't really like it so much, as I take them out every morning for a little bit of a walk, and we didn't know where to go. So.
Oh, yeah, well, my dogs, you know, they come and walk on my face and say, it's dog food time, don't you remember?
Yeah, there they are communicating with you, right? Animal communication is important. You know what happens when you start feeding your animals, they will just depend on you.
They depend on you, and they love you, and they become tame and friendly.
Exactly.
428-1393. The phone is ringing. We've got 10 copies of the book. I don't know, because I'm in the baking company, I'm not sure how many of them we've given away, but once we get to 10, that's it. But, you know, you can always go and buy a copy of the book, support your local bookstores, and support authors who go to the trouble of writing a book like this.
Yes.
That is so full of fascinating stuff that you just wouldn't ever think of it, that this whole domain of knowledge, if you didn't come across it.
And it's amazing. He sounds like a really interesting, funny guy who, I couldn't believe it when he said something like, all Jane Goodall had to do was, you know, write her thesis at Oxford. I'm going like, what? Yeah, okay, yeah, I could do that too.
Yeah, I could do that. Right. 428-1393. Well, this whole thing, there's a passage in the book where he goes to Russia and, because on a bear research mm-hmm. project, he talked to Russian research scientists, and he said, you know, in my country, I work like this, but none of the other bear scientists work like that. And he said, and the Russian guy says, we all work like that in Russia.
Yep.
And so the differences between how researchers work in different countries is not something you really think about, but those vast differences reflect cultural differences of academia and of the greater culture, and it's just very interesting.
Yeah, I think that people everywhere in the world are trying after the same thing, trying to preserve or trying to help different types of species, and this guy really hones it in on us, what we need to do and help or communicate with.
Yeah.
I loved his, I'm always confused about what to do when you meet a bear, and definitely not run. So
right.
The idea was always to make yourself as not as dominant, but show that you are, not weak.
Right.
Yeah.
And yet you are not threatening.
Exactly.
428-1393. Get a copy of this lovely book. And above all, support KSFR. That's what this is about. support shows like this, support all the shows on KSFR, support our ability to bring you non-commercial public service 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. 428-1393 is the number, 428-1393. Bears.
Bears. Gotta love them.
I swear to God, I fell in love with bears reading this book. Not that I want to have any close encounters with them. I went to Alaska once, years ago, and I had a friend who was working up there for the summer, and we went on a little kayaking trip in Glacier Bay, Alaska.
That's beautiful. It's
and
so
we
incredible.
Saw, we were in the kayak, and we saw bears and all sorts of bird wildlife and all sorts of wild goats, whose baby goats looked a lot like my terrier Milk. Anyway, 428-1393. We've got just a minute and a half left, and we are so close to our $1,000 goal that I can taste it. And it tastes like Oreo
like
cookies.
Support. Oh, yeah.
Oreo cookies and a lot of thank yous.
Oh, good. Let's hear them.
Peter Bennett.
Thank you, Peter.
Zoe the dog.
Zoe the dog.
Yay.
Annie the cat. An anonymous who loves you.
Oh.
Sarah Oakes.
Thank you.
Shelley Robinson.
Yay.
Jamaica the cat.
Very good.
I love it.
Rosemary Lopez, who
thank
says
you.
She's going to continue her sustaining membership because of this show.
Yay.
And also Diane Karp wants to, made a donation in praise of you, Mary Charlotte, for the diversity and excellence of your programming.
Thank you so much.
Diane is so wonderful.
Oh, my goodness. We've got another minute to keep those phones ringing, and maybe what we'll do... What do you think, Mary Lynn? Should we come back after the 9 o'clock news and just see where we are?
That would be good because there are people on the phone right now.
428-1393 is the number, and this is the Santa Fe Radio Cafe, and your support of this program is just the most fabulous. Bears, Oreos.
Bears love you. And everyone at the animal shelter loves you as well. Mary
oh,
Charlotte.
And we love everybody at the animal shelter. Hey, we've got just a few seconds left. No, we don't even have seconds. There are animals up for adoption at the Santa Fe Animal Shelter, and their names are things like...
Rosalita.
Rosalita the cat and another one named Luca. It's time to go. Everybody have a wonderful day, and thanks for calling. We'll be back
Thank
after
you,
the
Mary
news.
Charlotte.